Please don't say we are lazy. We're mostly sick. At least I was. Welcome to the podcast that was supposed to be out a week ago, but then whatever force of nature decided it had it in for me, decided, oh, the first day of your vacation, you're going to be sick, and then it's going to proceed, you're going to proceed to be sick for 12 days straight. That's been real fun. I really wanted to have six podcasts up in 1 week.
It was too beautiful of a dream.
I dreamed too big. I flew too close to the sun, and the podcast gods said unto me,
slow that shit down.
Nah, bitch. Yeah, yeah. So that's been fun. That's been my holiday break. How about you, Rhett? How's things going for you?
It's been going, and now I'm sad because it's almost over.
Yeah, yeah. We are recording this on New Year's Day, the very first podcast of the year. Look at us go. Look at us. We're on the ball.
And it'll be a while till the second one.
So what are we here for? We're here because we're going to talk. This is like we've only done one other anime podcast.
I don't remember ever doing one.
We did like an anime of the decade podcast.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Way back in the day. And then this year I ended up having watched a lot of anime, and I said to my good pal Red, I said, hey, do you want to do another end of the year show?
And I said, sure, even though I didn't watch as much anime this year.
Yeah, that's the weird thing. It's like, you are like the anime bastion. You are the one we all look to. And I'm the one that ended up probably watching more shows this year.
I don't know about that. Maybe. I looked at my list last night and I hit 69.
Oh, nice. I did not watch 69 shows. So that, okay. All right.
Yep. Girls was 69.
Well, sounds appropriate. But then we're doing this about the same way as a game of the year, I think, where there's no rules. Like, it doesn't have to have aired this year for it to be on the list. I mean, it's fine if it is, but we don't care. We don't care. We said to hell with your rules, right? We're rebellious like that. We're the podcast that rebels against your expectations. To my immediate virtual right, I got tears in my eyes asking why he played Haruhikage. It's Rhett.
Oh my god! Reference took me a second.
Why'd you do it, Rhett? Why'd you do it?
I'm sorry.
It's a good song. I get it, but you didn't. You ain't got to do me like that. And to my immediate virtual left, nobody. So this is gonna go real fast. What do you say we just friggin' tear into it? You ready to start?
I guess
talking?
We're just going.
We're
gonna for
just
it.
We're just zooming right in. We're gonna talk some anime, and I'll get us started. Okay. I'll let you be the showstopper, the end of the year guy.
I have a feeling. Okay, I've listened to the Game of the Year podcast because I was on it, and I've listened to Album of the Year. Mm-hmm. I think there's gonna be, even though it's only two of us, there's gonna be some overlap on these lists.
All right.
I think
I'm excited
so.
Because like I'm not entirely sure, but we'll see. So I guess we'll start. I've got a number 10, Rhett. What do you think of that?
Okay,
10's
okay.
Good. All right, so. Whoever's decision it was to just give Trigger a whole bunch of money and a cool license and then lock them in a room for a couple of years at Netflix deserves a medal, because Cyberpunk Edgerunners is pretty rad.
Oh, nice.
This is just one of those shows. It's like, hey, it's straightforward action. It's fun. It's big, loud. It's slick. It's stylish. It's just like this is the like this. Along with maybe another entry I may talk about, are the kind of shows that I show people when I want to get them into anime, because it goes down real smooth. It makes a fantastic first impression. I mean, and I guess that you're going to get that from any Trigger license, really. But
well, I don't know. I feel like Trigger is one of those studios where you really want to believe in them, and then like you show them this, and you're like, yeah, that's they're like the Platinum Games, where like. They've got the real high highs, but when they miss with like
BNA.
BNA, they can also miss pretty hard.
Yeah, they miss.
This was like the platonic ideal of a Trigger show to me.
Yeah, like this is like, I don't even want to say if you took an AI and you showed it 100 hours of Trigger animation, but it kind of is almost, but it's not paint by numbers, because it is legitimately a fun, exciting ride from start to finish.
It's crazy. The IP that they used was in the mud, and they revived it.
And they revived. They are the reason that that game took off again. I am 100%.
No. Yeah, definitely.
So, I think CD Projekt Red's got a lot of getting on their knees and thanking to do to this young upstart Japanese company. And this game, like, or this anime got me interested in wanting to play that game at some point. Yeah. Like, I legit, it's like, yeah, this seems like a real cool world. I love cyberpunk stuff anyway. I know that, like, it is a totally different story. I know it's not the same, but... yeah, like this is like Cyberpunk Edgerunners is legit. Like, you don't even need to be an anime fan to enjoy this. It's just big, loud, and fun. Good, just really, really, really fun stuff. So that's number 10.
Oh man, we're gonna be done in like an hour.
Hell yeah, buddy! We're gonna roll, we're gonna rip right through this thing. What do you got for a number 10, Rhett?
So right before the show, I was stressing over who's going to be the honorable mention, who's going to be the number 10.
Mm-hmm. Or do you have 12 anime that are better than Tevi?
Oh, yeah. I've got, like, 50 anime that are better than Tevi.
50 anime that are better than Tevi?
But I decided to leave my list as it is, and it's kind of making a statement.
All right. Let's go.
My number 10 is Gushing Over Magical Girls.
Yes!
And this is why I think there may be overlap coming up on our list, but we'll see.
All right.
I decided to let this one get the honors because I'll be frank, I didn't really get like turned on by this show that much.
No, this is a hard discussion to have because I think that no matter how you have it, people already have their ideas and thoughts about what this show is, how they feel about it. You know, they're already going to have their mind made up, so it doesn't really matter what we say. So it's just like, I get it. Look, we know you're probably going to disagree with us on this. It's fine. We're the weirdos. We accept that. We'll take that label.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did not find this show titillating.
Maybe a little bit, but it's like I've attempted to watch fan service shows in the past, and it's usually ends up being you fast forward to certain bits and then you don't actually watch the whole show.
That's not the case here
where it's like this show actually genuinely worked for me as a story, as a comedy, and towards the end, like, as an action show.
Yeah.
I was like,
they legitimately nail it in ways I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Because I went into it expecting just, oh, it's just an ecchi show.
Yeah, you just think it's going to be, oh, like a setup for them to undress the girls at the end of the episode and then move on and just repeat the exact same plot over and over. And then it's not that. There's more going on here. And also the relationship between Utena, the main girl, and the green magical girl that she obviously is the most into.
Yeah.
Is very interesting. I'm really curious where that is going to go in the second season.
Like, they're doing legitimate things here. Like, I think that they're... Yeah, like, the plot is, I think, legitimately good. Like, it's not going to blow the doors off or anything. It's not groundbreaking. No. But it is legitimately well-written for what it is. And I think that if you deep dive into what it's saying about, like, sexuality and, like, the discovery of one's sexuality and what the show is kind of saying about that, whether you agree with how it's doing it or not, I think it's making, like, a pretty solid commentary on those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just... It's a surprisingly fun show with more going on than you would think.
Yeah.
After, like, the first episode, especially.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's my number 10.
All right. Man, I'm loving this. I love this show already. This is my favorite podcast of the year.
Single episode.
All right. So I guess I got a number 9.
Okay.
So we're gonna continue with a trend then. Because I like Big, Dumb, and Loud, and I watched what may just be the biggest, dumbest, loudest show I've seen in a really long time this year. I literally watched it. It was literally the first anime that I watched this past year. So my number 9 is Akudama Drive.
Oh, thank God. I was like, is Polly going to remember that this is eligible or not?
Yeah, absolutely. This one was this one was on every iteration. So,
I love the show.
Yeah, like I might primarily like love a good story that's going to tug at the heartstrings and like deep characters on a wildly emotional journey. But but the heart of everything anime for me has always come down to my love of action movies. That's what got me into anime in the first place. It's just like the action. Mm-hmm. looked so different from everything else that I was seeing in cartoons. Yeah. It's still cartoons, but you know what I'm saying here.
Especially like in the 80s, those OVAs with the high budgets were just insane.
Oh my God, dude. It's just so crazy. And this really evokes that entire mood of 80s OVA series in a 13 episode series. It's just, it's bigger and dumber and better than so many action shows out there. This is just like an absolute...
It's so gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It is... Every episode is just an absolute wild ride with just a band of completely... your entire cast is just complete fucking lunatics.
Yeah.
Like, you were just like, there's literally only one sane person in this entire show, and you could maybe even argue her sanity by the end.
Oh, yeah. The whole journey is her and like embracing the insanity.
Swindler, absolutely one of the best characters of the year.
She's so good
and amazingly cute. This is a show that just feels like it's delightfully unencumbered is how I would explain it, because it's a show that can it's telling one story. It is telling a story with an end, so it can make full use of the freedom that it has to tell as wild and violent and ugly of a story as it can, because it's not tethered to some other work that it needs to. So this is just a straight shot, you know, one shot story. It was written by the dude that wrote Danganronpa, and by the end, you'll probably understand that. Not that the character designs don't really give it away, you know, but Akudama Drive is the shit. I love this show.
It's so good.
So much. Shret, what's your number 9?
Okay, so this is the entry I'm probably going to talk the longest about. Mm-hmm. It's going to go a whole, like, 5 minutes.
All right, let's go.
So a trend between my lists this year was that sequels didn't really hit for me, which was... On the music podcast, it was completely contrary to what you guys were saying. But for me, like in the fall, Bent Knee put out a new album that I didn't think was that great. And it was like four other bands that were like previous album of the year winners didn't really hit for me. And then on my game list, like I think there was only one like direct sequel, and it was a DLC. So when we did Anime of the Decade earlier, Sound Euphonium was my number 4.
Yeah.
And I went into that knowing what my top 3 was. And I rewatched like 20 shows, and Sound Euphonium came up on top of that list. It's a show I hold pretty, you know, close to my heart.
Yeah.
My number 9 is Sound Euphonium season 3.
I kind of figured this was going to... I thought this would be higher, honestly.
See, that's the thing, is that...
That's scary. You've got a banger of a list coming up.
It's that... The show dropped from, you know, number 4 of the decade to number 9 of the year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was so... The season was a little bit disappointing is kind of the thing where it's like, well, like my feelings on the original kind of crystallized at some point where it's like... Because at the time of season 2, that was the end of like the novels. Like there wasn't more material for them to adapt. So I actually thought that just was the ending. And then there's some stuff between. There's the spinoff movie, Liz and the Bluebird, which is not essential to the main plot, but it's just very good. And then there's a sequel movie, and then there's a sequel OVA, and then there's season 3. And that stuff post season 2 is just kind of mid.
Oh!
Because it's like the movie blitzes through Kumiko's second year of high school. After the first 2 seasons luxuriating in 1 year, like it's a very slow paced methodical show. And then the movie just moves really damn fast. Like, oh, new character. Oh, they've got a problem. Oh, let's resolve that problem in like 10 minutes. It's just, so season 3 finally brings the pacing back down to a more reasonable level. It's her third year of high school now. It's the big finale. And like the first few episodes are still kind of in that breakneck pace of like, hey, we're kind of, you know, high school has a repetition to it where you kind of do the same events over and over. It's really like the second half of season 3 where it's like, okay, we're taking this seriously now. We're going to end this story properly. And they do.
How much did you cry?
I fucking cried a lot.
Yeah!
There is a change from the novels that Kyo Annie did.
Oh.
Which people were... Like, there's... Anime fans are maybe the most notorious for being purists on certain things.
Yeah.
So the people who read the novels were, like, completely up in arms. Where I thought, just watching the show and not knowing that it was a change, I thought, oh, like, that's kind of brilliant that that's how this went. Oh. And then I looked at, I'm looking it up right now, the, sorry, I'm looking at Mal. The discussion thread for this one is long. The people were, okay, it's only 7 pages, which is as long as I thought, but it's more than the actual last episode.
Oh, my God.
So there's a change in the story that people were a little controversial about, but I think it's like a thing that saves the season almost.
Oh.
So yeah, and then it ends in like a very, very appropriate way. Like, character-wise, I think they get to the finish line mm-hmm. without, like, falling on their face completely. But I think, like, for me, it was still those first two seasons that were basically perfect. So I wouldn't not recommend season 3, but it was like, oh, okay, yep, you finished it.
Again, the fact that you said that, like, a half of this was kind of mid and it's still a number 9, I think that still speaks to its quality. And that still speaks to what it means to you.
It gets so good at, like, the last... Maybe even, like, last two-thirds. It was around, like, episode 5 where I'm like, okay, I'm locked back in finally.
Okay, you know, they found their... They found their mark.
Yeah.
Very cool. This is one of those shows where it's just like, I don't know if I would like it or not. I think that I've gotten over my bias toward it because mm-hmm. I did have, like, oh, it's just Yuri bait. You know, I was in that camp. I was like, oh, yeah. I know what you're doing. You're just doing your... And I think I held that against it. So I don't know if maybe my heart's ready to kind of be open to trying out season 1 or something to see.
Yeah.
Let's try it on for size. Because I know that I like something from this series, so...
Oh, yeah, the Liz and the Bluebird.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, and you get to see more of them in season 2.
There you go.
Right. God, it was funny. I randomly found my old tweet for when they first announced season 1 from 2014.
Oh my God.
It was almost exactly 10 years after
this is literally,
later that I was finishing season 3.
This is like your 10-year journey. This is your Mary Skelter journey ending last year.
Yeah. It was quite a journey because Kyo Annie went through some shit right after they originally announced season 3.
Yeah, Kyo Annie, you got to give them props. They've managed to pull back together after the tragedy that unfolded there. And
yeah. So even though I was maybe a little more tepid on this season, like it wasn't on them at all. Like they didn't just adapt it. They changed things for the better. And it is still, you know, just as gorgeous as ever.
And I'm still that person. It's like, I want more anime original endings and things like that. Like, that was one of my things that I liked about older anime, honestly, is that, yes, it was an adaptation. But odds are most of those shows are not going to get a second season. So they would often roll with, like, an original ending. And I am a big fan of the anime original ending. I will always stand the anime original ending because I like singular stories. So, good on them.
It's not quite anime original ending. Like, the last step, like, it still kind of gets to the same place.
Sure.
It's just the journey's a bit different.
That's fine. It's fine. I won't raise a fuss because I'll never read the novels.
Oh, God, yeah.
All right. So, we have the first of our listener lists. Can you believe that? We actually got a solid little amount of listener lists for anime of the year this year. And this first one comes in from Toad22484, who has a list of 3 anime. The first, which is one I bet that you can probably guess. The first one is Odd Taxi.
Hey.
This is another no-brainer. This is one of the better pieces of entertainment I've ever consumed. What started as a fun journey to check out something new turned into another enjoyable part of life. The story itself is too good to spoil. Absolutely. Just go watch it is all I would say. The art, the way every scene in this is thought out from beginning to end is honestly incredible. Thank you, Polly. This is probably a list I should have read reverse, even though it's presented in first, second, third. So
yeah, I always read them however they present.
Exactly. If you write it this way, this is how it's getting read. Second, I think this is another show that gets a lot of love around these parts. Bocchi the Rock.
Hmm.
What a fantastic little story about the shyest person on the planet, which I feel is an understatement. All the characters in this are really well thought out, and the way they lean on and the way they lean on and complete each other and their journey along the way is so cute, silly, and wholesome and comfy. If you want good laughs and good vibes, this show has it bursting like a beach bocce. That's a real good. It's a real good scene. And third, something may seem a little familiar to those of us who've been talking about anime for the last 5 minutes. Liz and the Bluebird.
Mm.
This movie broke me up. The emotion it puts forth in some of its major scenes is overwhelming at times, and for good reason. Regardless of my sad brain, I highly recommend giving it a watch, as the art in this one specifically is so damn good. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous piece of animation start to finish. Jesus cool. Christ. Yeah. An honorable mention goes to Perfect Blue.
Only honorable mention, Jam.
Only an honorable mention. You know, I let it go. We got a first timer. We got a first time anime watcher on our hands here, Rhett. You got to play gentle sometimes.
That is
you
a strong
know.
List, all four.
Yeah, it's a strong damn list. I am not going to complain about honorable mention on a list like that. All right. So. Number eights then. Eight. Here we go. I'll get us started. So, one of my New Year's resolutions last year was actually to watch every season of Umamusume Pretty Derby that was out. And I did. I managed to watch them all. And I even watched the OVA that was released, Road to the Top. And
nice.
This, my pick here, is one of my really painful cuts, because this is an instance where it's like, I don't want to have two Umamusume entries on my list.
I would just do franchise at that point.
I mean, I thought about it, but I was like, nah, let's make myself feel really bad. So I went with Umamusume Pretty Derby Season 2 as my number 8.
I mean, Season 2 really is the one.
It's so strong, and it ultimately comes down to me picking this one because I think it comes down more to it having more characters that I already knew and mm-hmm. liked. And I also have, you know, the inherent rice shower bias,
which is pretty damn strong.
It's real strong. But
her
really,
arc is so good in
oh
this show,
my
though.
God, it's so unbelievably good. It still punches me in the chest anytime I watch those scenes. Oh, I'd expect nothing less from my hero. Oh, God, it's so good. But anyway, the Tokai Teo main story is also just really strong. She's a real easy character to get behind, and like her successes come with so many unfortunate setbacks. And you see that gradually break her down every time, you know, whereas the first time it's just like, all right, I'm gonna get back at it. The second time, all right, man, that sucked, but I'm gonna get back at it. And then the third time, you're standing there, you're playing with a stopwatch and you're crying, and man, that scene is just gut-wrenching. Oh, I can't look at a stopwatch the same anymore, right? What I think is great, though, and what I think is amazing about, like, Umamusume kind of being here is that this is a series that I have talked endlessly about how if you stop and think about anything in this world at all, it's stupid as shit. It is the stupidest thing on the planet if you just start applying logic to any part of this world, these characters, anything that's going on. And I think mm-hmm. that it speaks to the strength of the storytelling going on here, that even through all of that, you can still feel like the immense weight of the really big moments. We mentioned the rice shower episodes. They're goddamn.
Yeah.
They were literally the only thing I've watched prior to watching the three seasons. I literally just watched like episodes 9 and 10 of season 2 like 3 years ago. You have like the twin turbo moment of her winning her race, you know, and doing that for Tokai Teo. It's just like, and the finale, like every bit of that just comes together for like a really good start to finish series that I think even just kind of works well on its own. Like, I don't think you need to watch season one to get season two. Because it's, and it's also because of the way they play around with like the actual horse racing timeline stuff. It's really weird, and
the timeline is so crazy at this point. It doesn't make any sense.
It does not make any sense whatsoever. But yeah, just and again, like for those that don't know, like all of the horse racing stuff in this show is like legit 100% based on real history. They just write their show around it. So the things that happen to Tokai Teo and like the breaks that she gets, it's just like, oh no, that actually happened to the real horse in real life. That sucks. And then Silent Suzuka went to America.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yep.
She went to America. Nothing else. Don't look it up.
They take real historical events and add Yuri to it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. There's a lot
these
of,
two horses, they were actually kissing.
They were super kissing. Oh my god.
They went on dates to the festival right before this race.
Yep, yep. God, it's such a cute little date they have right before the finale, isn't it? Oh my god. Oh yeah. I know I made the right choice because it's making me smile just talking about it. Yeah. Uma Musume, Pretty Derby, season two. Absolutely aces. I love it. What you got for number eight, Brett?
I don't have the self-control you do. I'm listing an entire franchise here.
Go for it. That's fine.
And I made this choice myself, and I see it sitting above Sound Euphonium, and I just keep laughing. Everything that comes after this now is like, really?
Oh,
but that's your favorite.
Everything's sus now. Your entire list is thrown into disarray.
I did this to myself.
Yeah.
Number eight is Jujutsu Kaisen.
Okay.
Listen, you had your I just like this because it's big, dumb, and loud
right.
show.
Absolutely.
This is my I just like this because it's big, dumb, and loud show.
I'm here for
this
it.
This is just pure shonen nonsense. I think season... So the reason it's the whole... everything so far is there's season one, which is... Season one is fine. It has one good emotional moment in the middle that I was like finally kind of on board after like six or seven episodes. It's a lot of fighting. It's a lot of, hey, we're killing demons and stuff. And then there's the movie, which is a prequel that takes place with a totally different main protagonist. And I actually really like that one. So it's like, okay, I'm invested now. And then there's season two, which ironically starts with a different prequel arc.
Oh, gee.
And it's like, at this point, I'm just like, do you just not actually like the main character of the series? Because now you're doing two prequels in a row about different characters that are more interesting. And that one is so weird because the vibes are so on point where the series, especially season two, feels like one step away from a masterpiece. Except I just kind of think the writing just isn't quite there or the story.
One step away from a masterpiece, number eight.
But like the animation, the fights, the cinematography, it's just, it's unreal.
You're exciting me here. I'm really kind of like, is this a Polly thing? Is this a thing Polly would like?
I don't know.
Or do you think the shonen trappings would be kind of a little
It's a lot of shonen, and I've heard basically that the manga kind of nosedives after what season two adapts.
Oh dear.
Because it ends on a big cliffhanger, and I've heard they don't really do it justice.
Oh, that's Polly poison.
Yeah. So it's not a complete story right now, which is disappointing. But man, the second arc of season two is very deliberately like this one flashback arc, and then like the Shibuya battle, which is like a full 16 episodes of nonsense. And it's just one of the most glorious things I've ever seen in an animation of just like, hey, we're gonna have this battle that like it starts with like fist fights in bathrooms in the subway, like real like intense martial arts stuff.
Uh-huh.
And by the end of it, characters are flying around like leveling city blocks.
All right,
like it's just insane escalation. Yeah, so I had a lot of fun watching this one. I'm not really holding my breath for more, but I kind of know why at like the Crunchyroll Awards season two, like fucking swept hard.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I did see this come up a lot.
Like I understand this is a crowd pleaser.
Sometimes
for sure.
You just got to go with the hype, man.
Yeah. There's one episode that is like just a big, like mecha tribute, which doesn't really even make sense in the context of what they're doing. It's just like, hey, we're just going to put a giant robot battle in here and like make a bunch of Gurren Lagann and Eva references. It's just like, yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah. Why not?
I can roll with that. Yeah. Why not? It's fun. That's my number eight.
Cool. All right. We've got another listener list coming up. This was an audio form, right? You remember those?
Ooh.
Ooh, audio form. We have our first listener list in audio form coming up from our good pal, Kusakari. So you ready to get that rolling, Rhett?
I am.
All right. We're going to launch that bitch in 3, 2, 1, go.
So for my three anime submissions, my first is going to be an anime that actually started airing last year and didn't finish until this year, and it's Apothecary Diaries. Season 2 is coming out in this coming up January, so I'm pretty excited for it. It's kind of Danganronpa meets really obsessed girl with poison. Like, the main character just likes poisoning herself to test basically the limits of how much plant juice she can handle. It's very funny. She's in the inner palace of this Chinese, I think it's China as a whole. I don't actually remember if it's a specific area or not. But it's basically following her shenanigans and kind of learning the inner workings of a lot of these political relationships. And at the same time, whenever events happen, she's the detective, and it's very funny. But also, anytime you get a slow burn reveal, it hits like a truck, whether it's in a good or a bad way. Probably my favorite anime from last year. I'd have to actually go back and look. It started last year, but definitely one of my favorites that I finished this year. My current anime of the year for 2024, specifically, that came out and aired this year, is just Hibiki Euphonium. Season 3 aired this year, but my favorite entry is still probably Lives in the Bluebird.
I did not know this was coming.
I've never been in band. It's one of my kind of regrets that I never did in school. But it's a show about a lot of passionate characters growing up, basically, and finding out really who they are. It's nice. It has a lot of good moments. It's a little Yuri bait at times, which is a little annoying. And, you know, it's not perfect. It has some things that kind of throw me off here and there, such as being Yuri bait. But it's really good. It's one of my favorites. If you've seen Lives in the Bluebird, which a lot of you have from the group watch a couple months ago, I think, or weeks ago. I don't actually remember how long ago it was at this point. If you like that, you probably like Hibiki Euphonium a lot. My favorite character is definitely the main character, Kumiko. A lot of good to her. Her realizing things throughout the series is very, very cathartic. And then my third is Girls Band Cry. Loved it a lot. The animation took a little bit to get used to, but by episode 2 or 3, I was fully into it. I love the music. It's right up my alley. I like the quirkiness of the characters and the stubbornness of most of them. It was very funny. I'm really hoping for a season 2. With the way season 1 ended, I'd find it hard to believe it doesn't get a season 2, or at least some new content. I have a hard time picking a favorite, actually. If I had to guess, or really, like if someone put a gun to my head and I had to, probably Momoka. But they're all, the main three are, I love all of them. I like the other two as well. Not as much. I mean, it doesn't help that they were introduced later. But yeah, those are my three, probably favorite anime that I finished this year. Now, obviously I could watch an anime between now and the end of the year that I like more, but hey, time constraints, you know?
All right. I think Kusakari actually saved himself here. And he didn't realize he dodged a bullet. because mm-hmm. because if he said that his anime of the year was Girls Band Cry, I was just going to ban him. Not only does he have Girls Band Cry on his list, but he also lists like the wrong character. That is not Tomo. I'm sorry. What are these words that are coming out of your mouth that are incorrect? I shouldn't bash on anybody's end of the year list. I always make it a point to never do that, but I think Kusakari knows I'm just busting his balls.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't expect the euphonium sweep.
I'm honestly shocked. Yeah, I don't listen to these coming in. Like, so
I didn't either. Yeah.
So I had no idea. So yeah. Anyway, moving on to number 7. I got a number 7. So if you ever, like, Rhett, and this is some good advice for you or anybody out there, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you were unable to produce tears, I hear that doctors everywhere for, like, the last 6 years have been prescribing an episode a day of Violet Evergarden.
Oh. Wow, I forgot you watched that this year.
Me and Ballas mainlined this shit in a day. The TV series. Dude, I was not ready for that. I was not ready for how emotionally potent this series is. Every episode is... it's a show that explores the depth of the word love, basically. And mm-hmm. it tells a bunch of stories through a character trying to understand that because she was a child soldier. Mm-hmm. And you know, she learns this because she ends up writing letters for people to help them express their feelings. And I think that's such a cool setup. It's one of the more unique premises for shows that I've seen. But it's just... this show is just so emotionally raw. I was not ready for how flattened I would feel. And episode 10 is probably probably the hardest I've cried at a piece of media. It just, man.
I feel like I need to go back to that one. I watched this like when it was brand new, so it's been a while mm-hmm. to remember specific episodes.
Right. Yeah, this is the one with the mom writing letters to her daughter to have over the years, and it's and they even they touch
and they I remember now.
Yeah, and they touch back on that in the first movie too. Where one of the main character, where one of the side characters from that episode ends up being a main character in that story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I liked the TV series. I liked the OVA and I liked the first movie, which is not called the movie.
What about the movie, Polly?
No, thank you.
Oh man.
I get it. Like, I know what they were going for, and with the way that story was leaning toward the end of the TV series, it's like, yeah, I know they're probably gonna go that way. But it wasn't for me. Like, I didn't mm-hmm. like the movie. But I did like the first movie they did, which I've completely blanked on the name on. But it's a very long name. It's the one that's got a really long name.
Is it like Eternity Memory and the Auto Doll?
Yes! Something like that. That one. Yeah, Eternal Memories and the Auto Doll or something like that. It's just, that is an amazing little movie. Got a great character in it. A little kid named Taylor. She's amazing. She's so good. Just such a little highlight of the show. But yeah, Violet Evergarden was just something that came along and hit at a time where it was just like, oh, I knew that this show was... emotional. I did not know that I would end up flattened by the end.
Well, you didn't follow the doctor's recommendation. They said one a day and you mainlined it.
I mainlined that. We overdosed, basically.
Basically.
But yeah, that's my number 7, Violet Evergarden. Yeah. What about you, Rhett? What's your number 7?
I kept seeing this on my list when I, like, put it... I wrote the top 10 like a month ago, uh-huh. and I kind of kept looking back at it and being like, okay, looks good. You've been wanting to hear my opinion on this one for a while.
Okay. Oh, okay. I know what it is.
My number 7 is Frieren.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you sure? Are you sure it's this high?
I'd not heard you talk about this show at all, and it literally just made me think, he thinks it's a nothing burger. Okay.
You know what it is? I think I finally just now figured out what it was.
It's Ooble.
The community talked about this show enough that I felt like I had nothing to add to the conversation because it was so loud for so long.
Yeah, this show was literally everywhere. There was this and another show were literally everywhere this past
like,
year.
Like before it was Bochy and this year it was Frayrin at the start in January where
Frayrin and then Dungeon Meshi.
Yeah, and right now it's like Dan to Dan. Like, there's just certain shows that blow up to a point where, like, the noise around them is a little deafening.
Yeah.
I think this show is just excellent, though. Like, when I really looked back and thought about it, this is the one I did dock at one point right before. I told you I swapped my
you
six
swapped
and seven.
It. Yeah.
I did knock it a little bit because I went back and looked and was like, wow. This show is 28 episodes, which is a little longer than normal, especially when stuff is like 24 now.
Yeah.
But it's even above like the old 26. The last arc in this, though, is 11 episodes. Woo. I did feel that was a little excessive.
Did it just go nowhere? Or I mean, I'm fine with arcs being long. I think that that's okay.
It's a weird pacing thing because basically there are no arcs till that point. There's like a two or three parter. There's like a two or three parter in the middle. And then an 11-episode tournament arc, which is just, we're shifting gears, and it's a little rough. The pacing just comes to a weird bump in the road. But so for me, it was kind of like, hey, the first 17 episodes are perfect. And then, I don't know about, which is weird, because that's when Ooble gets introduced, is the slow part.
Oh, that's crazy. Man, she's such a good character. I don't know anything about her. I just know she's a great character.
I mean, she's a cute green hair murderer. That's all you need to know.
Those are my favorite kinds.
Yeah, so you do actually get a lot of her because she sticks around for that entire arc.
Mm-hmm.
But the high point, basically, it's like the high points of this show are so fucking high.
Uh-huh.
That it kind of makes up for maybe the last arc being a really good show. Like, yes. It never like completely turns into trash, obviously.
Hey.
It's just like, oh, like, I really liked what this show was doing with small episodic episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So when the last 11 episodes are spent
doing one thing,
it was like,
I see now how the pacing could get a little wonky. Yeah. I think that would take a show down a notch for me, too.
Yeah. But again, it's still landing at number 7, which I think is very good.
That's still pretty respectable.
Yeah. The high points of the show are just breathtakingly good, though. Like, it's one of those shows like where you go, this can't possibly live up to the hype, you know.
Mm-hmm.
when the talk around it is so loud, like Celeste.
The Celeste of anime,
where you go, this can't possibly be good as everyone says, and then you watch episode 1 and you go, holy fucking shit, it is. So it's kind of maybe all downhill from there to a point, but it gets off on a very good foot.
All right.
Yeah, I think this one's worth checking out. I hope they make more. I mean, the manga
had
some hiatus issues.
I think they're back now. I think
they're back now, but I don't know how much material they even have for season 2 is the thing.
I see this definitely getting more in the future. It was just way too big to not, I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So ultimately, I did like it a whole lot.
Fantastic. That is an awesome number 7, Rhett. All right. So how do you feel about another listener list?
I feel good.
You feel good? All right. We got one coming in from John Thayer.
Who's that?
I've heard that name around somewhere.
Oh, do you mean Faraway Times?
Faraway Times, right.
Or Chronomaniac?
Chronomaniac, of course.
There we go.
That's
right. I think for the anime list, it has to be Chronomaniac.
It has to be Chronomaniac, the 14-year-old who once told me I was God.
But was he wrong?
No, absolutely not. All right, so John says we got an honorable mention here, and it goes to Cautious Hero. The hero is overpowered but overly cautious.
I love this one.
Boy, I feel like that's just one of those, right on the 10, huh? You get what the 10 says.
It's an isekai. It is.
Okay. All right. All right. Some of my hardest gut laughs this year came from this one. So, yeah. Okay. I guess it's really funny.
It's really funny. Right. I'm backing this one up. I'm the one that recommended it.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, Rhett usually is a fount of good recommendations, so that does not surprise me. All right. Number three, making its second appearance today, Gushing Over Magical Girls.
Nice.
Perfect show. No notes. Number two, Nichijou, My Ordinary Life.
Hmm.
Constantly funny and inventive. I love good sketch comedy, and these are just fantastic sketches. Nano is wife of the year. And number one, I think this one is pretty much Socks Cast approved. Keep Your Hands Off Aizuken.
Oh, yeah.
Delightful and inspiring and pure joy the whole way through. Other shows about the creative process get overly sentimental and schmaltzy, but Aizuken generally strikes a good balance between soaring creative highs and semi-grounded practical realities. Beautifully directed and animated, as expected of a Yuasa joint. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I rewatched this one this year. It's still great.
Yeah, this one still fucks real good. All right. Man, we're at number six. We're at number six already. Can you believe this?
Nice.
Let's say we continue on to selections that could easily be prescribed by doctors in case of a tear deficiency. My number six is Liz and the Bluebird. Yeah.
Euphonium sweep continues.
Euphonium sweep continues. I love that this movie basically seems to have come about because the story between the two main characters is just kind of there in the background. In season two, and Naoki Yamada just kind of like latched onto it and saw something real deep in there and went for it. And I like that it has that, like, oh, like you just saw this little nugget there that could have been nothing, and then you turned it into something that is one of the most amazingly breathtaking pieces of animation I've ever seen. It's a gorgeous film, top to bottom. This is one of those stories that just like, it hits you in the gut, and it's really down to earth and grounded, and it just rings true to life in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. With certain types of closeness and relationships can sometimes be like unintentionally toxic, and a recontextualization of that relationship may need to happen. Mm-hmm. The two characters at the center of the story, like, while it's very clear they care for each other, what each one is pulling from the relationship is kind of like the wrong thing. Like, they're both kind of getting the wrong thing out of the relationship, and it's this twisted up power dynamic that it's kind of been allowed to form between the both of them, and they're failing to communicate what they each really actually want. And the way they play that against like the fairy tale of the actual Bluebird, like the storybook that they're going through, like the fairy tale, the way they've mixed that in, and like when it finally hits you what exactly the meaning of the Bluebird is, it's just I literally stood up in my chair and gasped when I understood what they were doing there. We did a watch along of this one, and we got to that moment. There's a very specific moment where you know what they're saying, and I literally just like instinctively stood up and gasped at how well they'd played that moment, with what it means in regards to Nozomi and Mizore's relationship. It's one of the heaviest moments in fiction of the year, I think. Just an absolute gut punch to the chest, man. A gut punch to the chest, you know, where those really go. So yeah, that's my number six, Liz and the Bluebird. Boy, we really are on. We really are on the euphonium sweep, huh?
Yeah.
All right, Rhett. Do you have a number six? What's your last entry for the day?
For the day? I mean, it's barely been an hour.
It hasn't been an hour, no.
This definitely could be one episode, but so far, almost everything listed has been pretty recent.
Yeah.
What if we throw it back a little bit?
How old? I know that you watch a lot of things, Rhett. I know that in those 69 shows that you watched, we may be going back to 1969. I know that.
Not this year, unfortunately, but like there's kind of an echo here. We're going all the way back to 2010.
All right, that's a good
which
year.
Which isn't actually that that's... long ago.
15 years, Rhett.
No, no.
Don't think about it. Don't think about those 1,500 plus days.
Yeah. My number six is Rainbow, which I'm not sure if many people are familiar with nowadays because it's been 15 years.
I know the name. I just don't know that I've seen it.
Last year I watched a bunch of old shows. One of them was Ashita no Joe or Tomorrow's Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's a story about, it's a boxing show, but the first arc in that is he goes to juvie.
Yeah.
Because he like punches a cop and gets arrested. Mm-hmm. So Rainbow felt like a very like it kind of locked in on that part of the story where it's like, it's 1955. It's post World War II. And the show starts with like six kids in juvie. Because Japan's not doing too well right now, and like they're angry at the world.
Yeah, post World War II, Japan is rough.
Yeah, so you've got these six kids in prison, and their prison guard is like a complete psychopath who is like abusing them. Mm-hmm. It is a very painful watch for the first half, because you know they're trying to escape or like just they're trying to survive. Man, sure. it's bad.
Yeah.
And like it's a full 26 episode show, so the whole thing isn't them in juvie. They do eventually get out. There's a time skip, and it ends up being a really uplifting show. Like I think that's why it's called Rainbow. It's like there was a better future awaiting them.
Oh.
So like even though I think it is like a full adaptation, but they kind of trimmed some storylines out to complete the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Actually, maybe I don't know. I felt like satisfied as if it was a full story by the end. Yeah, the manga is 22 volumes. I don't think they get to all of that. Just not that we should be bringing up these, but it has an 8.46 on Mail. Like people really do like this one all these years later.
This is just kind of like way out of my radar. Like I usually hear about shows like this at some point, but I'm sorry.
This one is so old that I remember seeing it posted up out on 4chan.
Oh boy.
And people were like really liking it. And I was like, it's such a tough watch though. Those first few episodes are brutal.
Well, I love Living in Misery. I watch Technolize for fun.
There's parts of the show where I think, is this just like suffering porn? Like it gets real bad.
Oh, jeez.
Like because of the turn in the middle and like how it cares about its characters, ultimately, like I did feel like it's a great show.
Fantastic. Yeah.
It's hard to talk about the monologues about show no one listening probably has any
like
idea
that's
about.
It's always hard to kind of like I feel it's always best to just try to kind of give the best synopsis you can and just be like, look, if you like the what that sounds like, go give it a look, because I obviously like it. It's on my list.
Yeah, better than Sound Euphonium season 2.
Oof, poor Sound Euphonium. But they're still, you know what, they can't complain. They have an embarrassment of riches in being on lists.
I know they're all over. I really didn't expect that. Okay, so that's my number six.
That's
is
your
Rainbow.
Number six. What do you say we close the day with one final listener list?
Oh, sure.
Sure. All right. This comes in from our good pal Beepner. And he has got these listed in 3-2-1 order. So that is the order in which I am going to read them. Number three, Zom 100, Bucket List of the Dead.
I haven't watched this one.
When Akira Tendo awakes to find Tokyo overrun with zombies, his first thought is that he's finally free from his exploitative office job as he sets off to do all the things he wanted to do. Cartoonishly bloody without being too darkly comedic, although still a bit slapstick, Zom 100 actually presents a pretty hopeful vision of the apocalypse. Even if season 2 never gets made, this stands as a pretty solid 12-episode run.
Cool. I definitely want to check this one out.
Number two, I think, is going to bring some smiles around. I think you might enjoy this. So number two is Symphogear Season 1.
Oh.
I'll be the first to admit that I've had no desire to watch Symphogear ever since hearing about it circa 2014. But on a whim, I attended a Symphogear panel at an anime convention and decided to give the show consideration. Lo and behold, Discotech's media vendor table was selling the Blu-rays, so I bit the bullet and picked up the first season. I passed up Lyrical Nanoha for this. Macross mixed with Kamen Rider and gay girls. Should have known this would be a slam dunk. I guess you could say I'm simpo-pilled now.
Oh, to see him getting to season two.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's favorite.
I've actually kind of dedicated myself to rewatching Simpo Gear this year myself, actually. I think it's due for a slight reevaluation just because I think that when I watched it, you know, I was watching it because I was like, oh, I just told somebody I'm going to watch it. And I'm maybe not 100% watching it because I 100% want to. But I am now at a point where it's like, no, I actually do really kind of want to watch it now. So I'm kind of in that mood of to kind of like, let's give this another go and let's see how. I have a feeling that the highs are still going to land as good as they did. And I think that maybe that some of my personal lows may actually be elevated a bit since I'm going into it with a bit of a different mindset. So
okay.
And number one. Another just an absolute banger, Princess Tutu. Again, a show I heard nothing but praise for but never bothered to give the time of day. It was an AMV of all things that made me remember its existence, and coincidentally I discovered it was on sale during a Sentai Filmworks Black Friday sale. This shit was like $5 for the entire series on Blu-ray, dog. A magical girl show in the traditional sense, solving random folks' problems rather than fighting tonkutsu monsters, but weaving ballet and fairy tales into the main character's tale of unrequited love. Princess Tutu's emotional typhoon ripped my heart out and danced on it like Michael Flatley, and I'd gladly let it happen again. Absolutely. That's a solid, solid list there. Cannot argue with that. So do we want to give one last look at the day's entries, Rhett?
Sure.
All right. So my number 10 was Cyberpunk Edgerunners. My number 9 was Akudama Drive. My number 8 was Uma Musume Pretty Derby Season 2. My number 7 is Violent Evergarden. And my number 6 is Liz and the Bluebird.
My number 10 was Gushing Over Magical Girls. Yay. Number 9, Sound Euphonium Season 3. Number 8, Jujutsu Kaisen Seasons 1, 2, and the movie. Number 7, Fragrant at the Funeral. Number 6, Rainbow.
Fantastic. And that is going to do it for us for day one of Anime of the Year. We're going to get ourselves out of here. I don't have a sign-off for this show, so... Oyasumi nasai!